From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Obama and Romney debate for a second time tomorrow night. This race is tight. Today, we'll go to the front lines, to the swing states of Ohio, Florida, and Colorado, where the presidential candidates are going all out for every vote that's in play. We'll look at who's still persuadable and why. This hour, On Point, with just 3 weeks to go, we go to the swing states. You can join the conversation. Have you seen people, friends, neighbors, yourself, go back in play after the first Obama-Romney debate? Who's movable now? Which way and why? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll start today with a national picture just 3 weeks before Election Day. Joining me now from Poughkeepsie, New York, is Lee Mieringoff, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion at Marist College. They've run national public opinion polls since 1978. Lee, thanks very much for being with us. What's the big number nationally now, Lee?
Well, the numbers are very close indeed. In fact, we've been polling in the very three battleground states that you alluded to, Florida, Ohio, and Virginia. So we do have a good sense of those post-debate. Clearly, what we saw is a shift. It isn't an enormous shift in Romney's direction. I mean, I think right now we're looking at single digits kind of things, but Obama had a very narrow lead, so he really didn't have many points to give at that point. And as a result of his lackluster performance, we did see some movement in Romney's direction, and it really changes the landscape of this presidential contest right now because of those shifts at this point.
Anyway. Lee, give us some of the big national numbers. We're going to focus in, and of course, these three are not the only swing states that matter, but they are big ones.
Yeah.
Nationally, what are the polls finding? What have you found? Others?
Well,
what's it look
we
like?
Haven't done any post-debate national polls. Mm-hmm. The national polls are generally showing it within a point or two either way. Obama had a 3 or 4 point edge. Our polls really have zeroed in on Florida, Ohio, and Virginia. And those are showing a very interesting picture because those are probably the three states that are going to go a long way to determining who's going to win this contest.
So take us into – well, first of all, nationally still.
Yeah.
Obama had a 3 or 4 point lead in national polls, and that's now, you say, down to a point or two, but either way. So he's up or down by a point depending and, whose polls you're looking at.
And the Real Clear Politics average of polls right now is showing it 47-47, so could it be any closer?
I mean, that's a big deal to go from 3 or 4 points up to literally a dead heat again, right?
Yes, absolutely. And and the key thing is not just the margins that are either separating or in this case not separating the candidates. It's also important to look at in all polls, you know, if you have an incumbent and you have a challenger, what the number the incumbent has at that point. In other words, obviously 50 is a good number. 47-47 is different than 49-49 in that sense. Or if someone's ahead, if, you know, President Obama has a 2 point edge, it really matters if it's 50-48 or if it's, let's say, 48-46. So we really keep an eye on all these polls at what Obama's number is, recognizing that it's not shocking that Romney would pick up some of the undecided in the closing weeks of the campaign. People who are not yet committed to the incumbent's reelection very often gravitate towards the challenger.
We're going to Ohio in just a second here, to Florida, to Colorado, not to Virginia, but you've been polling in Virginia.
Yes.
What did you find there?
Well, Virginia showed the largest movement of these three states post-debate. It's probably Obama's, of the three states, the one that he will have the most difficulty in. We saw a 3 point swing, and we have now Romney ahead by 1 point in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Obama was pre-debate up 2. Now he's down 1. And again, his number is 47. So that's a problem potentially for the president's reelection prospects from Virginia.
And Lee, what about the so-called undecided? We've been told for, it seems like months, that there was just a tiny percentage of undecided voters in this country. And then comes the first debate. It sort of makes people sit up and say, wait a minute. And I'm hearing all kinds of numbers about the percentage of voters that might be in play. What does that look like to you at this point?
Okay. What we've seen, and interestingly, in all three states, it was the same number.
Mm-hmm.
We had 4% saying they were truly undecided in Florida, Ohio, and Virginia. We also asked people who are committed to a candidate how strongly committed they are, or will they, or might they vote differently. And in each state, again, it was the same number, coincidentally, it was a 2. So we have 4% telling us they're undecided, and of those 96%, the remaining group who say they are committed, only 2% tell us they are considering to vote differently. So you're talking, and that's why, even though Romney, for all intents and purposes, cleaned the president's clock on the first debate. I mean, you don't see a 5 or 10 point swing because there just is not that much on the table. And if Obama does better in the town hall meeting from Hofstra tomorrow, the you know, the rebound, if there is one, is not going to be a 5 or 10 point rebound either.
Right, but of course, these little margins really matter.
Absolutely.
Because if you've got a 1 point race
absolutely
here or a dead heat, all it takes is 1. Never mind 2 or 4%
to turn it all around. It's funny, Tom. You're exactly right, Tom. I mean, you know, statistically, from a polling methods standpoint, these are just nuanced differences. Editorially, and in terms of who takes the oath of office in January, they're huge.
All right, we're going to the swing states. Lee Meringoff at Marist, please stand by there in New York. Here's a little sound of the candidates working hard on these states. We're going to go first to Ohio. The president was last Tuesday at Ohio State in Columbus in front of a crowd here of 15,000.
Knock on some doors and make some phone calls for me. We'll win Franklin County again. We'll win Ohio again. We'll win this election again. We'll finish what we started, and we'll remind the world why the United States of America is the greatest nation on earth. Thank you, Ohio. Let's go vote. Let's go win this election.
The president doing some cheerleading in Ohio last week. Mitt Romney was there too, though. Cuyahoga Falls, same day, last Tuesday, saying 4 more years? Forget it.
I've been watching some of the President Obama's rallies, and they chant 4 more years, 4 more years. And today they're 28 days before the election. I think the right chant ought to be for them 4 more weeks, 4 more weeks. All right.
And a big cheer there for Romney on 4 more weeks. Let's go to Ohio. Joining me now from Columbus is Joe Varden, political reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Mitt Romney visited his newspaper last week. Joe was one of those in the room in Columbus putting questions to the Republican contender. Joe, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
First, just to the raw numbers, Joe, what's it show in Ohio? Where does this race stand? What's the latest?
Right. Well, Obama, the president, is still ahead. There's no question about that. But there's also no question that we have a much tighter race here in Ohio than we did before the debate, just as you were talking beforehand.
Yep.
Polls were showing the president up here comfortably before the two met on stage in Denver. And now, not so much. You know, there was a poll this morning, late last night, that showed the president up 5, but I think if you look at both camps' internals, it's much more of a 1 to 4 point race.
Is Ohio winnable by Mitt Romney? You're there reporting on the ground. You're listening to everybody. How does it feel?
Well, it feels like it's winnable because when you go to these Romney rallies, and there have been a million of them, of course, here. I mean, there's a lot of passion. There's no question. The crowds are huge, and the people there want to remove the president from office. There's no doubt about that. So it feels that way, but despite how bad the debate went for the president, the fact that he's still ahead here, and he's still, you know, I mean, he's still drawing, and his campaign is very optimistic. It, you know, it's still, I mean, it's fair to question whether it can be done by Romney here.
So still a reach for Romney, but you hear the passion in those crowds, 20 electoral votes in play. No Republican has won the White House without Ohio. So this really matters. You had a focus group on the night of the first Romney-Obama debate. What did you learn from those that watched along with you at the Columbus Dispatch?
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of a focus group, the effect that the debate had, you can't understate it, just in terms of how poorly the president performed and how, really, I mean, Romney was pretty good. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Even for the people who are supporting the president, I mean, they were disappointed. But at the same time, 7 out of 12, we're still supporting the president. So there you have it. I mean, we're talking about 12 people, but
yep.
I think you can't get any more clear than that. Romney, clear victor, clear impact, and yet at the same time, the president's still ahead. And I think that's where we are. It's close, and the president's got to do better tomorrow night. But right now, in this state, he's still ahead by a little bit.
So maybe a key firebreak for the president in Ohio. Who's movable in this race, Joe? What's the profile of the movable Ohio voter who hasn't decided or who was in one camp or the other and still persuadable? What's that voter look like?
Jeez, I don't know. I mean, I think the Saturday Night Live parody was pretty right on about who the undecided voters. I mean, there seem to be so few of them. Just polling shows that it's really, a lot of people have made up their minds. And as you guys were talking about earlier, the undecided voter is going to tend to go towards the challenger if they haven't made up their mind. And in terms of a profile, I have a hard time with that one, honestly, just because, as both candidates say, the choice is pretty clear in terms of a difference.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's really going on in the swing states in the Obama-Romney home stretch here. We're looking today at Ohio. We're there right now with Joe Varden from the Columbus Dispatch. He's actually down at a Romney-Ryan rally in Cincinnati as we speak. We'll go to Florida as well. We'll go to Colorado. Lee Mierenkopf is with us straight through, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion at Marist College. Here was Mitt Romney in Lancaster, Ohio on Friday to an enthusiastic crowd.
When Paul Ryan and I become president and vice president, and I mean when we become president and vice president, we will do everything in our power to keep America strong, to restore the values that make our homes the center of our society, to keep our economy strong, and to have a military so strong no one would ever think of testing it.
Mitt Romney there in Ohio on Friday. Here was Chris Wallace of Fox News Sunday asking President Obama's campaign senior strategist yesterday, David Axelrod, about Mitt Romney's bump in the polls after the October 3rd debate.
I think he made a little bit of progress after the first debate. I think he picked up some of these Republican-leaning independents who had lost heart watching his convention, watching that 47% tape. He got some of those people back. I think he made all that progress in the first couple of days. And in fact, Chris, this morning there's a poll out that shows the president leading in Ohio by 5%, leading in Arizona by 2%.
True, but very close in Colorado, and we'll go there. Lee Mierenkopf is with us at Marist. Joe Varden in Cincinnati, Ohio right now. Joe, Lee, we've got all kinds of feedback online. AC says, I really, really wish it was November 7th, the day after the vote for now. She's still undecided. Christine says, get this vote over with. Enough screaming. Connie says, I lived in Ohio in 04 and North Carolina, which was big in 08. Can't even imagine, she writes, how non-swing state voters must feel. It's not right. A lot less attention there. Joe Varden, remind us of the geography in Ohio. What's red? What's blue? How's it tend to divide up?
Well, where I am right now in southwestern Ohio is dead red. Where I wrote about for this morning's paper up in Cleveland is deep blue. Then you drift down into Columbus, where I call home, and it leans blue, but that is only in Franklin County, where Columbus is actually located. In the surrounding counties that we consider central Ohio, it's much more red. So you get a really kind of an interesting battleground component there.
So if you had to call it today, based on the polling you've seen, I hear you're saying it looks like it's leaning Obama to you. How big a job does the president have in Ohio to keep it there if that's where it is, Joe?
Well, he's got to do better tomorrow night. He just does. And I think if he does, I think more of his people will feel better. I mean, here's the truth. I mean, when you talk to some of Obama's top people in Ohio and in Chicago, and the recorders aren't rolling, mm-hmm. they never thought that the 10-point advantage, for instance, that some of the polls showed in Ohio, they never thought that was right. But at the same time, when you know the roof fell in and that night in Denver, they never felt like they had they never felt like they had lost their advantage in Ohio. So what I'm saying, they've always thought that this is going to be a 2 or 3 point race in this state, and that they would win. And they, I mean, they're very confident in that. Whereas on the Republican side, you had started to notice that they were losing faith in this state. And then in after that first debate, they were, I mean, as fired up as you could ever imagine, and they had really felt like Ohio was back in play. Not that they had taken over, but that it was in play.
Lee, what do you see?
Yeah, I wanted to throw one other dimension into the Ohio picture, and that's the early voting.
Yeah.
We're seeing an enormous number of people, close to 20% of the folks in Ohio have, in fact, already voted. Obama does very well among early voters. He's carrying them by about 2-1. But among those who are just going to vote on Election Day, that's Romney's crowd. So, you know, one of your listeners commented they wish it was November 7th. Well, some people are getting done with it right now, so they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Joe, what about that? Is it Romney's crowd voting on Election Day? Why would more Republican voters be voting in person and more Obama supporters, Democrats, be voting in advance? Is that true?
Well, if you go back to 08, the answer, of course, is yes. And to a large degree, it's probably true now. But there's one other interesting thing to consider, which is that this year, everyone had an opportunity to request an absentee ballot and vote early by mail. Whereas in 08, only certain counties, really the larger urban counties, had that opportunity. So now you would have, you know, the folks who live on a farm in northwest Ohio or outside of Toledo, they would have a chance to have already mailed in their ballot. And so requests for absentee ballots are way up among Republicans. So that's just an interesting thing to consider there.
Let's bring our listeners in. Diane in Summertown, Tennessee. Diane, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, why should one debate count so much? They spend all this money on these elections, and wouldn't people be paying attention? And why do they make such a big deal out of just one debate? Is it like a American Idol or something?
Well, it's a good question, but maybe that's just how tentative some people have been. Let's take it to my guest, Diane. Lee, first to you. One debate, and here we got this big swing. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, what you had, for example, in Ohio, where we're talking right now, only 7% made up their mind after the debate. So it's not like it's, you know, the media, the campaigns, it's the big event until the next debate tomorrow. But still, you know, it didn't change a large number of voters in terms of who they're going to vote for. And only 7% told us they had made up their minds since the debate. Romney got about 2 for every 1 that Obama got in that case. And, you know, people, you know, pretty much liked Obama about the same, but they liked Romney more as a result of the first debate. So the debate did have an impact. And it has made the race a lot closer, or even as close as a coin toss right now.
Joe, I was trying to pin you down on this before, but Let's give it one more active imagination here. Who watches that debate? And our caller Diane says, is it American Idol deciding your vote on the basis of that? But on the other hand, here are these two guys making their case to the country, and you can imagine some people saying, well, I want to hear their energy and their ideas right now.
Well, to Lee's point, he's exactly right, because a lot of people were paying attention beforehand, and so the fact that the president is still ahead even by a hair in some of these swing states is a testament to that. On the flip side, 67 million people tuned into this, and they saw a Governor Romney, whom many had never seen before, performing incredibly well. It's kind of like a new Romney, and they saw a president who was as bad as they had ever seen him. And so in an election that is close, mm-hmm. in an election where, you know, perhaps the faith wasn't in the challenger at the time, and then you see this contrast, I mean, it just, like, as we've said all along, it had a profound effect just on how they view these two people. And I think had the president done better, had he been more himself, we wouldn't be talking about this debate in terms of historic proportion.
Well, I'm sure we will be talking about all about debate again this week and next week as well, given how close this is. Joe Varden in the heart of the big, big swing state of Ohio at the Columbus Dispatch. Joe, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's swing ourselves all the way out west to Colorado, Denver. Chuck Plunkett joins us. He's politics editor at the Denver Post. He's been there since 2003. Chuck in Denver. Chuck Plunkett, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Give us the big numbers first. Where does it stand as we speak, Chuck? What's the latest you know?
Our latest Denver Post poll shows it essentially tied with Romney holding a slight edge, 47-46. And with the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson looped in, it stays Romney 1 point ahead, falls off a little bit, about 2% of the vote peels off to Gary Johnson. That's a bit of a change. Our former poll, which was a few weeks before the debate, showed Obama with the edge by 1 point. So Obama held his ground, Romney advanced 2, undecided shrunk from about 7% to 5%.
And at this point, Romney up 1 instead of Obama up 1. When was that polling done, Chuck?
It was done Tuesday and Wednesday of last week.
Okay, so give us a feel for your state then. There's movement right there, and all it takes is 1 point, even less than a point, to win. How do you see the dynamic in Colorado? What's going on? Where is it moving? And who's in motion, Chuck?
Well, one of the things the polls showed, we asked about whether the debate would matter. You know, it was right here at the University of Denver. We thought Coloradans might pay more attention to it. And of those polled in our most recent poll, 12% said the debate made a difference. And of those 12%, about 60% of them swung either away from Obama or away from undecided to Romney.
Interesting. Do you have a profile of who those swingers are in Colorado?
I would think they're the mostly independent type voters, the unaffiliated. Thing about Colorado, we like to say it's the swingiest of the swing states. It's the hardest to read of the swing states because of the way the demographics break here. It's consistently a third, a third, a third between Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And the latest filings showed, you know, Democrats at 32%, Republicans at 32%, and independents at 35%. So you've got to get those folks who are unaffiliated, who wait until very late in these types of things to make up their mind.
So if you're in the Obama campaign boiler room or the Romney campaign boiler room, you're trying to figure out who to target right now in these last 3 weeks in Colorado. What's your suggestion, Chuck?
Well, you know, the candidates have been here many times, and they're trying to fire up the base as well as make incursions into the areas that are the more type swing districts. I think Romney served himself well with that debate. There are folks out here who don't want to just by default give their vote away. I met a Intermountain Westerner this summer that I interviewed who, by all accounts, by all stations in life, he should have been a Republican leaner or a Republican voter, and yet he was adamant that he wasn't going to vote for Romney until he knew what Romney stood for, what his ideas were, that kind of thing. I think those are the folks you got to win over, the folks who have to believe that their vote is going to a good candidate.
So let me ask you how this tape plays now in Colorado. This was Ed Gillespie. This is senior advisor to the Romney campaign. Again, talking with Chris Wallace on Fox News yesterday, saying he believes, of course, Romney now has the edge.
The country's pretty evenly divided, Chris, and we've always felt this was going to be a close election. David Axelrod and I don't agree on much. We couldn't agree on a stop clock, what time it is, but we could agree that from the outset this is going to be a close race. I knew that when we were behind in the polls. I know it now when we're ahead in the polls, but I believe momentum is clearly on Governor Romney's side, and he's going to win in November.
Romney's Ed Gillespie there. What do you make of that in Colorado, Chuck? Who's got the momentum? Can you feel it? I don't know how you'd measure that, but if you've got a windsock at the Denver Post, what's it tell you?
Well, the debate really, in my opinion, the debate changed things. Going into the debate, I think Romney was in very big trouble in Colorado. And the common wisdom here was that Obama would win. You know, Obama won Colorado by 9 points in 2008. Mm-hmm. The Democratic National Convention was held in Denver. The historic nomination of Barack Obama was held right here at Invesco Field at Mile High. And he was very popular, but now the climate has changed, and there was just something about the way that Romney comported himself on debate night that helped the leaners make up their minds.
And we're seeing that in polls across the country. Ohio sticking with Obama so far. Colorado very, very close now. Baylor's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Baylor, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question, I guess, going as an independent myself, I voted both sides in the past.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, based on the elections that we've seen over the last 10 years being so close, why aren't these candidates really appealing more to these swing states and the independents? Because I feel like we're making more of the decision these days, because there's such loyalty behind the Republican versus the Democrat, you're not likely to convert as much as maybe educate the independents to make a wise decision. And I love hearing Chuck's comments, because I feel like it's definitely speaking to me and a number of the independents that I talk with.
Well, I mean, we'll look at it. I mean, my sense, we'll go to Chuck there in Denver, and Lee, you followed all over the country, but I think they are appealing as just in a vast volume of ads and money and everything else to the swing states. What about the effort you see being put in Colorado, Chuck?
Well, certainly we're getting all of that, huge amounts of money. The ads started very early. No one could believe how early the television ads started here. And the viciousness of the ads and the constantness of the ads. I think one thing that's important to answer the caller's question is that in Colorado, and the Intermountain West as a whole, there's a certain apocryphal or mythological idea that we're not as partisan as other parts of the country. There's a tendency to want to work together to solve problems because of the remoteness of the region and whatnot. And then I think the newcomers who have flocked here like the laid-back, more mellow, less partisan way of life. And so in a year where you saw a hope and change candidate who was going to, you know, take us away from red and blue into some kind of new future, that played well here. And certainly the Democratic Party went to a lot of trouble to highlight the so-called Intermountain Western Democrat that was different from Democrats in other parts of the country in 2008. But now you've got a situation where it's much more of a partisan war, and I think that turns folks off in Colorado. Not that there aren't very ideological, very committed folks on the right and on the left. There certainly are. But in this case, like we're talking about, we're trying to hit those people in the middle who might lean one way or the other, but are willing to give their vote to the candidate they most trust.
So, Chuck, how does President Obama fire up tomorrow night, if that's what he's going to do to counteract the criticism that he was too low-key in the first debate? How does he fire up without offending that resistance to partisanship that Coloradans tend to feel?
I think he has to remind us of who he was more in 2008. I don't think that's going too far out there. I think that we need to remember that he can be visionary and can speak very eloquently along those lines. I think he has to, like, stand his ground and not get, you know, shoved off the stage, so to speak, and remind folks of the promise that he had back in 2008.
And your gut on which way your state, Colorado's tending right now with 3 weeks to go?
Tom, I'm terrible at predictions, and it's been so surprising to watch this race from Colorado so far.
Boy, what you guys described sounds like it's really going to be a nail-biter. At least so far we've seen from that first debate how things can change. Chuck Plunkett at the Denver Post, politics editor there. Great to have you with us, Chuck. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's really going on in the swing states in the Obama-Romney home stretch. 3 weeks to Election Day now, and we're looking at Ohio, at Colorado, and coming right up here, Florida. We've got Lee Meringoff with us from the Marist Institute for Public Opinion at Marist College. Joins us from Poughkeepsie, New York. Been doing these polls for a long, long time. And with us right now from Florida, in St. Petersburg, Florida today, political editor for the Tampa Bay Times, Adam Smith. Adam, thank you very much for joining us. What's it look like in Florida? What's your latest polling show?
Well, our latest polling out last week showed a sudden big surge for Romney, with Romney 7 points up, that's a swing of about 8 points from the last month. I think that's probably the most extreme he's up. There have been a few other polls that show him either neck or neck or up a few points. So I think clearly he got a bounce from that first debate in Florida. But Florida is always going to be close.
I mean, this is huge. Florida's 27 electoral votes. You've got him, you say, up 7 points, Romney, up in your latest poll?
According to the Mason-Dixon Tampa Bay Times poll, he's up 7 points. Now, I think Florida is not a state that anyone ever wins by 7 points. So that's probably the best-case scenario for Romney. But clearly there has been some momentum toward Romney since that debate.
Lee Meringhoff, how do those numbers compare again with your latest Florida polling?
Yeah, we're showing Florida about even right now. And Florida is an interesting state, as Adam referenced. And I just hope they don't send us into extra innings like they did in 2000.
Amen to that. But how can it – listen, we're paying attention to these polls, and people are partisans are hanging on them, and then you guys come up 7 points apart. How can that be? I mean, that's beyond any margin of error. Adam, how can you have a poll that comes up 7 points different from Lee's and expect us to believe any of them?
Because in Florida, we always want the attention, so we thought we'd have a poll of this.
But seriously, how do you interpret it? How could that happen?
I mean, personally, I have a hard time believing Romney is up 7 points. This is Florida. Florida is a state you win by 2 or 3 points at best. If you look at the last 5 presidential elections, one was a tie, essentially. 2 were won by Democrats, 2 were won by Republicans, and if you total up all the votes, there's less than half a percentage point difference between the Democrats and Republicans. So our poll suggests Romney is clearly at the edge, but there's no way it's going to be a 7-point race, and I think this state's very much still in play with 3 weeks to go.
Is there some different way of polling, Lee, that you do from the Tampa Bay Times to come up with that difference?
I'm not sure. I don't know if the Tampa Bay, the Mason-Dixon uses cell phones. I think they do. If I'm not mistaken, it's not live interviewers. I could be wrong, Adam, if you could correct me.
How about Adam? Is there something?
It is live interviewers and cell phones, and one of the keys is to have bilingual interviewers in Florida with so many Hispanic folks.
Sure.
One thing that I think is a little bit different. In Florida, we have very good voter registration statistics, probably the best in the country. And so a lot of the people that are based in Florida that do a lot of pollings will weight their samples toward the actual likely electorate based on the voter registration numbers. And we do, and not everybody else does.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the few states that does, I know, have good registration numbers. Look, I think the bottom line on all this is that President Obama, as candidate Obama, carried Florida by 3 points last time when he had everything going for him. So the expectation is it has to be closer than 3. And I agree with Adam. If Romney carries it by 7, then he's probably going to sweep the country, because that would be very unusual indeed for Florida.
Adam, I'm asking everybody, let me ask you there in Florida, do you have a sense in your mind's eye or from your polling of who is in play in this race at this point? Who's still movable demographically, economically, I don't know, in terms of state of origin? Are people who've moved to Florida, native Florida, who's still movable now 3 weeks out?
You know, Florida, the reason it's the ultimate battleground state, the biggest battleground state, is because it is such, it's almost the perfect magical microcosm of the country, between every part of the country is represented, urban, suburban, rural. I think that there is that very small number, whether it's 4 to 8% of people that are either undecided or soft for either candidate, that is movable. And I think one thing we always watch very, very closely in Florida, and especially this race, is the Hispanic vote, which in Florida we have a lot of Cuban-Americans who tend to be Republican, but we have an exploding population of non-Cuban-Americans, especially Puerto Ricans, who tend to be more in play. They lean Democratic, and I think the Obama campaign thinks they've got a real opportunity to bolster their numbers with the Hispanic vote here.
So far, though,
the last few polls have showed Obama's probably not where he needs to be with those Hispanic voters.
Yeah, and I might say, I think Adam correctly points to the changing demography of Florida. In 2008, the exit polls showed that 71% of those who voted were white. Now our numbers are showing that figure's in the mid-60s, so that you do see a decrease in whites, an increase in Latino voters as a part of the whole sample.
Let's go to our listeners, Michelle in Columbia, South Carolina. Michelle, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am really disappointed in the American people, but especially the swing states, because they have not been following the campaign all year long. And they would know that despite Romney's performance at the debate, that he has so much baggage. For instance, he required Ryan to give 7 years taxes for him, but yet he only gave 2 for us.
So you're going to whack them on the knuckles because they didn't already make up their mind? I mean, aren't they free to watch and listen even late in the game, Michelle?
Yes, but late in the game, they're watching the debate. A president doesn't have to debate. He has to negotiate. And they're willing to change courses in the middle of the stream where he's been working on our security. He's working on trying to balance the global economy.
Yeah, Michelle, I hear you making the case for Obama. We get it loud and clear. You say presidents don't have to debate, except they do in one instance, and that is when they're trying to get reelected. And that's out there right now. But I appreciate your call. I mean, on that, Adam, here's Roy in Boise, writes to us online, Idaho, I guess. He says, in the last debate, people think Romney won because, Roy says, he etch-a-sketched many of his prior positions and was not held accountable for his switches. So the question is, why didn't the president call baloney in the last debate? Was his technique simply rope-a-dope, and this next time he'll come out swinging hard and fast? Adam, what's your sense in Florida of, if people are in play, what they want to see from President Obama this week at Hofstra in New York?
Well, I think they want to see that he's got a pulse, for one thing, because he was so sedate in the last debate. And I certainly know there are a lot of Democrats in Florida and across the country that were listening to some of Romney's answers and probably practically shouting at their TV screens, wondering why Obama didn't respond more aggressively. And I think it was just a case of sort of trying to run out the clock. We went into that debate where the sort of conventional wisdom was this race was Obama's, and the only question was how badly was Romney going to lose. And so clearly we're going to see a lot more aggressive approach from Obama. And I think there are a lot of people that want to probably see a little bit more about what Obama actually wants to do with his second term, not just criticize Romney and say he's a terrible alternative, but to hear a little bit more of the vision for a second Obama term.
Well, the tough interpretation of who won got Obama revved up. This was the next day, October 4th, in Denver, the day after that first debate.
If you're willing to stand with me and work with me, we're going to win Denver again. We'll win Colorado again. We'll finish what we started. We will remind the world just why it is the United States of America is the greatest nation on earth. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Hey.
President looking to come back there in Denver, but Mitt Romney, a couple days later, on the trail down in your neck of the woods. Adam, this was in Apopka, Florida, October 6th. Mitt Romney.
I'm counting on Florida to win this for me on November 6th so we can take back this country, get it strong again. I love this nation. We're going to win in Florida. We're going to win across the country. We're going to get America back on the path that it needs to be to have a bright and prosperous future. Thank you so very much. You're the best. Thank you. Thank you.
Cindy in Nashville, Tennessee. Cindy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. As a voter in a non-swing state, I just want to express how frustrating it is to feel like my next president is going to be chosen by this tiny sliver of either uninformed or low information or not interested or people who can't make up their minds. You know, it feels like it's such an unfair way to pick the president. And I heard one commenter not long ago on NPR say that he didn't believe there really were undecided. He thought these people had a Munchausen by proxy syndrome and were getting attention because they said they were undecided. But, you know, that may be unfair, but I do think there is an element to this that is frustrating to those of us who follow issues, who take the time to be aware of things from early on. And I just want to say, you know, why can't you make up your mind? Why are you undecided?
You know, Cindy, we hear your chagrin. It's loud and clear. And yet, in that debate, I think some people watched and thought and they were gauging something beyond just policy positions. Some people, Adam, you tell us, some people felt like they were gauging Obama's hunger to do it for another 4 years, his keenness to get back in and do more. And I think, Adam, some people just didn't see it there.
I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. He really didn't look like he was wanting it especially bad. He was so mellow and sedate. You know, and I think in terms of the election being decided by this tiny sliver of low information or soft voters, I think that part of that is just a function of how polarized we are now, where both sides are so hardened in their positions, Republican or Democrat, but it's left to this small sliver, and then within that small sliver, people that don't make up their minds until the very end when they start paying attention.
Lee, do you have some of Cindy's disrespect for people making up their mind at this late date, or does that seem to you to be natural and ordinary? I don't know.
The unusual thing about this is that so many people made up their minds so early, which does speak to the polarization. You always have some people who are kind of like sitting on the fence because they feel they should wait to gather all the information till the very last moment. Then you also have some of those people who are saying they're undecided, unfortunately just may not vote in the end, because Cindy's right in the sense that if you haven't made up your mind by this point, you probably have had enough information, and most people have in fact done so. So yeah, there's a few out there, 4 or 5% maybe, but most folks are have made up their mind. I think Cindy's also suffering from a little frustration because she's not seeing the campaigns. The candidates aren't going into any of the states other than these battleground states, and you don't see the ads unless they're national ads. So in a sense, the campaigns, you know, they talk about how they're going to be the president for all the United States of America, but they really are targeting just these swing states, and that's where the money's being spent.
Yeah, I mean, the way our system works, they've got to put their time and money where it's going to bring home the bacon, and that's just the way it's cut right now. We're looking at swing states, Florida, Ohio, Colorado. There are more. We've got those three with us today. Let's go to Joe in Somerville, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Tom, great show. I would like to say one thing, is that New Hampshire, two polls came out recently, one showing Romney up by 4 and one showing a tie. It looks like Romney's going to take New Hampshire the way this is shaping up. And if New Hampshire goes red early, I think that Romney will win the race. He's likely to win Florida based on recent polls, Virginia, North Carolina, Colorado is in Romney's column. And all he needs to do is pick up New Hampshire and a few of these other states. He doesn't even need Ohio. New Hampshire goes red, so goes the election.
Well, we'll see. Joe, thanks for your call. Lee, what about it? Read that electoral map with us. I mean, we're talking Virginia, Florida, Ohio, Colorado. How else could the puzzle come together here?
Well, it might come together 269 to 269.
Oh,
there are plausible scenarios for that. Look,
then it goes to Congress,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. The states we've been talking about are really, really important because Florida has 29 electoral votes. And now if Mitt Romney doesn't win Florida, he has to win every other of these 8 battleground states. He's got to sweep them all. If Mitt Romney doesn't win Ohio, he has to win all but 2 of them. So of the remaining 8, he's got to win 6, as long as one of them is in New Hampshire because it only has 4 electoral votes. So basically the states we're talking about here, Florida and Ohio, are really, really key to the strategies of both sides, and they're both very close right now. The edge in Florida, probably to Romney. The edge in Ohio, probably to Obama.
Hey, Adam, we don't want to see this thrown to Congress. We certainly don't want it to come down to Chad's again in Florida. Talk to us on that front. If it's close in your state, please tell us you've got your voting in line there, that we're not going to have hanging Chads and all that kind of stuff again.
Well, Florida being Florida, we have a real knack for screwing things up, so I can't totally reassure you. But we will not have hanging chads, thank God. We won't have the guy sticking up the card toward the light because we no longer have chads. We have sort of fill in the boxes, so it's a little easier to interpret the votes. Although, that worst-case scenario where everybody's done in Florida counting votes at Thanksgiving, we probably would be analyzing absentee ballot signatures to see if these are valid absentee ballots or not.
So put your...
One thing I can say for Florida is, I think at this point, Romney may have a slight edge in Florida, but early on, I think a lot of people thought Florida was a gimme for Romney. That, governor's race went to Florida last time, the Republicans swept, Republicans dominate state government, and the fact is it's not at all, and Romney is having to spend a huge amount of money here in Florida at the end when I think they probably hoped that it would be more comfortably in their pocket.
Yeah, and as I say, he really has to carry Florida, or Romney has to carry everything else. You don't still use hanging chads in Florida in your ballots, do you?
No, all done. All done with that now. This turns out to be a real nail-biter. Adam, first two, then I'll go to Lee. But, okay, here we are. Put your Florida flip-flops on for a moment. Think about the debate tomorrow night, the town hall-style debate. What do you think the president needs to do to get Florida inching his way, Adam?
I think he needs to show a real pulse and some hunger, and I think it's going to be really interesting because it's a town hall debate, so it's not as easy to be very aggressive when you're taking questions from regular, everyday people. So
yeah.
He's got kind of the balancing act between being aggressive and also being sort of empathetic and addressing the actual citizens as opposed to the moderator.
Adam Smith at the Tampa Bay Times with us today from St. Petersburg, Florida, riding the tiger down there. We'll be watching. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
And Lee Meringhoff, final thoughts on the president and his challenger, Mitt Romney, tomorrow night? Who needs to do what there, real quick?
Well, the style is critical, and the town hall format changes everything. In a sense, you can't be aggressive as much as you might be in the first setting or in the third debate. So we'll have to see how they rebound from the first go-round.
Regular citizens in the hall, yep. And these two have to make their case right there with that moderating influence. We'll see. Lee Meringhoff with the Marist Institute. Look for their polls out. Lee, thanks so much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook.
My pleasure.
You bet. This is On Point.